This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the Morning Run with Xiaoning and Chuang. Now, in about half an hour, we're speaking to Michelle Kaiti Lim, the CEO of Institute of Corporate Directors Malaysia, ICDM, on who qualifies to sit on the board of directors. And it's also the question we're asking this morning in our poll. What's the most important trait for a company director? Do let us know. It's available on the BFM tweet. But in the meantime, let's talk about the weather because... wow, you know, it's supposed to be dry season in Malaysia this time of the year, but like last night, the storm was incredible. So the Malaysian Met Department has warned that we'll be seeing wet weather and cloudy skies until the end of July. And we're seeing the impact of these heavy rains across the country with flash floods reported in several states, including Selangor.
Yeah, it's also a recurring problem here in Kuala Lumpur because this is despite the billions of dollars and ringgits that we poured into structural projects over the years like the smart tunnel that will mitigate funding.
So, of course, why is flooding still so common in parts of KL? And, you know, the reality is that there's always going to be an economic cost when there is flooding, right? So to help us understand what causes urban flooding and also what we can do about it, we speak to Dr. Tana Uja, who is the researcher with the Institute for Environment and Development at UKM. Good morning. Thank you for joining us, Doctor. Now, talk us through the main causes of urban flooding in KL.
The main cause of urban flooding in Kuala Lumpur can be divided into two. The first thing is the natural factor, which is due to the locations of that area, which often we call a fluvial flash flood, which is common to this kind of area. It is the natural conditions of Kuala Lumpur. It's either from its lithology or rock type for a terrain or a common torrent rainfall in the tropical country and the natural drainage or river system that exists surrounding that area. Kuala Lumpur also situated at the valley area, which is a place where water from various tributaries meet before they flow down to the lower river or lowland area. Thus, the extreme rainfall definitely can weaken the soil and cause mudslides. The second factor would be human-induced factor, or often we relate it to drainage system, but this can be considered to rapid urbanization that include sedimentations due to land use changes, either deforestation, excess more concrete area that reduce water more percolations, lack of impervious area to the ground. Therefore, more surface runoff that drain to the drainage system that has a limited capacity because being in a tropic country, we often have a pouring kind of rain instead of drizzling. And this problem further compounded by disposal of rubbish thrown to the river that block the flow of the drain or river, which cause flood.
Yep. Doc, is there data on the economic cost of recurring flash floods in the city?
Economic impact of flooding in the city, Kuala Lumpur city by far, not many people did study. They did do some review on the economic impact, but they don't put a price on it because we know that a flash flood is occur without any warning. So it's often expected to be more damaging and affect the people more often when they're not prepared. So how do you calculate that? Because people often say that the indirect and direct impact. So in a direct impact, we can calculate it if you loss or damage of properties or destructions of public facilities. While the indirect impact, for example, economic shutdown and life disruption, so how would we count that? Even if the direct impact can cost you about millions of ringgit, but what about indirect impact? If you shut down an economy, it would be more than that. For example, several days or several hours, you already lost several things. You cannot do your business. So the impact actually much bigger than we thought because it's not just property that we can see. Yeah.
So, Dr. Tanot, can I ask, can the problem of flash floods ever be eliminated in KL then?
Looking at the nature of Kuala Lumpur itself, it is a flash flood prone area. So we ought to have some understanding of that. So eliminations would be probably difficult because living in tropical country, you have a lot of water and we must expect that we probably have it, but we can minimize it. Eliminate will be very almost difficult. Even if you do a lot of engineering or we call it structural approach, it might not help, but we can minimize the impact.
What kind of flood mitigation projects have been carried out by the government over the years, and have these been effective?
Kuala Lumpur is a city centre that several agencies continuously work on minimising the flash flood impact through the adaptations and mitigations. For example, the most obvious one would be done by DBKL and the Drainage and Irrigation Department, we call DID. Drainage and Irrigation Department, for example, series of storm water control includes smart tunnel as well as series of storm water retention ponds. In the case of smart tunnel, it is very effective to control flood in selected targeted area, but not the whole of Kuala Lumpur. We can see in the last weekend that this case of smart tunnel be able to save Dataran Merdeka, Kampung Baru and Jalan Munshi or Masjid Jame and Jalan Tupara, but not that the area of Segam Bod and slightly far away from that. And also the DID also did some kind of, we call it stormwater retention pond, by building this retention pond near the tributaries up in the upper stream river. For example, Rockpool Reservoir at Jinjiang, diversion pond in Jinjiang from Sungai Kero and Sungai Noch. So it could minimize the water from upper stream to downstream area to Kuala Lumpur. They also did a lot of non-structural approach, mainly done by DBKL, from cleaning of Gombak and Klang River, understanding the nature of the people who live along the riverside, who do this dumping to the river itself. And then they control those things. And also a work by academicians or scholars throughout the country by mapping the flood risk, try to look into the early warning system around that area. That also contributes to understanding of flash flood phenomenon in the city.
But would more non-structural mitigation efforts actually help? And what would this actually look like then?
By far, with only DBKL and Fuse NGOs probably doing that non-structural, but university as well, because non-structural include from understanding the environment, for example, mapping the flood risk area or mapping the topographics of the area, understanding the rocks, understanding the terrain of the area, it will help us to minimize the impact. Those kind of study probably, we often mislook this kind of non-structural approach, or we just took it for, just doing it. But probably if we focus more on this, or attitude of the people as well, for example, less people throw or make river as their dumping area, it would probably minimize the drain clogging or things like that. So it is mainly due to human activity. If we be able to instill the appreciations of their environment, protecting, and then they have the awareness of their environment by not dumping the disposal to the river, probably we can minimize some part of it. So I believe that if we work on more of non-structure, which is less cost, it probably happens in the future.
Thank you. That was Dr. Tano Ujab, researcher with the Institute for Environment and Development at UKM. And I like the way she reminded us that it's not always going to be big money projects, right? Structural issues, structural things that will make a difference towards avoiding flash floods, which has unfortunately no one's computed or able to quantify the economic cost, but definitely we know it, is something that we can do, which is don't throw trash around because it ends up clogging the drains and going into the rivers and in the end also causing all these flash floods.
No, I think that's a microcosm of the larger issue. The reason we have flash floods, and this is amplified in Penang, especially in Georgetown, where there's a lot of development, right? In a natural setting, when you have flash floods, when you've got huge tropical, heavy tropical downpours, that water dissipates itself naturally, ends up in, tributaries, rivulets, little streams, rivers, and then you end up in, the Yangtze Kiang, for example, and then it empties into the ocean. That's what happens.
Yangtze Kiang, okay.
Okay, just demonstrating the Mekong Basin, for example, right? But when you have development, right, and you've got concrete that covers the earth, there is no runoff.
Yeah, but I mean...
So all this is essentially man-made, right? So it's the big trade-off between within whether you want to keep your natural environment or you want development. The reason why we have so much development is because we want to get rich and we want to be developed. We can't have it both ways. Either
we
keep our natural setting...
But the one thing we can control, the one thing that we can make a difference, because, we can't always control development, right? We can't control the weather.
We can. Of course we can.
Well, sometimes. I mean, the one thing we can do within our little ambit is to not throw trash into the drains.
Yeah,
right?
But that's like...
And that we see that all the time, all over KL. People just wind down the windows and just throw whatever they want.
True.
And now
that's
it's the new trash, mask.
Yeah.
And gloves.
So this whole ambivalence towards the natural, to nature, is exemplified by these people throwing trash out the car windows.
And sadly, you know, with global warming, weather patterns will get increasingly erratic, right? So I think it's something that we have to learn to live with, but we also need to do our little part for the environment, right? And otherwise, flash floods would continue, and it's not going to be a problem that will go away. But up next, we'll be speaking to Benjamin Cowling of the University of Hong Kong on the resurgence of COVID cases there. That's going to be happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.